All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, April 28th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is 48 degrees and pretty sunny here in upstate New York for late April, so it's not too bad. So where do we leave off? Yesterday, we titled the show 21st Century Cures, Bye-Bye FDA, Human Gene Editing, and Let There Be Light. And at the very end of the show, we had looked at a story where they had discovered that at the very moment that sperm fertilizes egg, there's actually a burst of light. They caught that under, I would assume it was an electron microscope. It was actually pretty interesting. Caused me to get all philosophical after the show as to what that means. But, you know, as we're sitting here looking at mad science, hubris, people who think that they have risen in education, oops, hold on, to the point where they are worthy enough to start creating life from scratch. You know, these people are releasing this stuff, and you know, we talk about this on a daily basis. They're releasing this stuff wantonly out into the wild and saying that they're trying to improve life without your say or mine. Dubbing themselves godlike, mixing and matching things that shouldn't be mixed and matched between species. You know, I mean, we've all heard of the spider goats or the Arctic flounder that doesn't freeze. There's going to be all kinds of freaks of nature coming here in the not too distant future with CRISPR. You know, I have to find that interview, and I'm going to have to go through my history because I think I've had a crash since I had that all queued up. But the one of the main professors, I don't know if he was an advisor or whatever, on the research when they were doing CRISPR at the university level, it was a good hour and a half interview that I listened to a couple weeks back. And what he was saying is that when they first discovered CRISPR, CRISPR was a killing machine. And I don't find that too hard to believe. A number one, they love to develop killing machines. But a number two, when you unzip DNA, what do you think's going to happen? Bloop. You know, I was just reading the other day after the show, because I asked that very same question. And in reading, I swear to God, I'm going to have to take like a genetics 101 or something, take a summer class. I know online MIT had some beginner genetics courses for free. So if anyone's interested, message me. I don't know, it'd be hard to take by myself, I think, just because I have so little time. But if I had somebody who wanted to take genetics 101 with me, and at least give me a daily or a maybe every 2 day, every 3 day challenge to get a course or a lecture listened to, it would make me do it, you know, because I would have somebody else poking me with a stick saying, come on, you're late. But I was looking at some Genetics 101 material the other day in regards to the question, what happens when DNA gets unzipped? And apparently it is exactly what happens pretty much within CRISPR. You have the base pairs that now no longer have a partner because you've unzipped it in the DNA strand, and it finds partners that then connect and make new DNA combinations. So whether or not it's a death machine, which I would assume it would be, because all of a sudden now your DNA strands that were making proteins are unzipped and no longer making proteins. But look, there's all this other free material. Who knows where the free, I don't know, we're free floating proteins. And now they're all going to go in and bloop, connect. But who knows what that combination is going to make? I mean, in the end, the point I wanted to get across was that when CRISPR was first developed, it was a death machine, okay? And then they figured out how to intelligently not only snip out, but then intelligently reintroduce sequencing that they've designed or that they had purposed. And I don't know, guys. You know, it really makes me wonder where we're going to be just a few years from now. Like we've discussed, they have sent out CRISPR to over 60,000 labs wantonly, that not-for-profit, that then can replicate that CRISPR technology and send each lab can send it to 60,000 more labs. So CRISPR is been democratized. I've been seeing a few different things now where they're taking these end of the world, end of life as we know it, end of biology, end of history, human history that has been going on for bazillions of years, mixing planet Earth up in a dish without your eyes open. It's at that point now. And they just keep coming up with new stuff that they can, quote unquote, democratize. Let's not keep it in the hands of researchers. Let's not involve any type of regulatory agencies or ethics boards. No. You know what? Things are moving too slow. And look, Ray Kurzweil has already moved up. He's merging with the machine singularity. Did you catch that in that Playboy interview that we did a couple days back? His transhumanist date of 2045 has now been backed off. Did you see that? To 2029. He is now saying by 2029, we should be connected to the machine. And guess why? The law of exponential returns. And we looked at Craig Venter yesterday. He's the rich billionaire venture capitalist that loves to mix it up with genomics, and he's got all kinds of projects going on. It was a pretty long, in-depth interview, though, and to be honest, I mean, if you want to learn about Craig Venter, take a look at Craig Venter. You know, just one of the another billionaire who's trying to shape our future, but his interview was kind of boring. But check this out. Spanish scientist uses skin cells to create human sperm. So we've now come to a point, we've talked about this a whole bunch of times, about how now they have the ability to use your skin cells or even your fat cells, we just heard the other day, out of your love handles, and coax them into becoming not just stem cells, but pluripotent stem cells, which are the ones that are there when you are an embryo, that can turn into any type of organ or system within the body. Well, now you don't even need males, because guess what? Now we can just use our own skin cells to create sperm cells. What's the value of life at this point? What's the value? You know, we look at how they're going to make us all live forever. We heard that one yesterday. It's all about us. 21st Century Cures Act. It's all about you and Johnny. Going to make sure you and Johnny and Susie, Nana, all live a really long time because we've cured death now, right? You heard that. We cured aging. Yeah, not death. Aging. We have mad scientists so obsessed with getting that dangling carrot that they're going to take some new untested technology and inject themselves with it to hope to win the billion-dollar prize. So they're going to keep us safe, but God forbid we have climate change. I just saw, can I just, I want to get off topic here for 1 second. I just saw a story yesterday. You want to talk about how asininely bullshitty it is with this climate change beating the drum, stupid ass agenda. And I'm not going to say the climate's not changing. That's pretty damn obvious that there's a change going on. I'm just not going to be blamed for it because I didn't have anything to do with it. And if you want to blame me or my lifestyle or me driving a car is the reason that we have climate change, then maybe back in the 1970s when, I don't know, I was a 9-year-old kid jumping up and down and you guys had a Three Mile Island meltdown and we had an oil embargo going on in the early 70s and everyone's going, oh no, and all the jobs evaporated and people got laid off. Maybe back then you should have said, hey, you know what? We already know that this isn't good for the environment. Maybe we should go spend some money on solar. But no, there was too many bazillions of dollars being spent on oil and nuclear to do that. But wait, there's more. We had another accident in 1986 with Chernobyl. But that still wasn't enough. So here we are now in 2016. Oh, you bad people. You're still driving cars. And by the way, you're eating beef too, which is not ecologically friendly. We're going to have to take that away and give you bugs. Bug protein for you. It's healthy. 21st Century Cares Act says we need to keep the cost down. And that insect protein is nice and lean and green. And it'll save the planet. It's sustainable. And you can even farm crickets in your own kitchen. We looked at that way back. But back to this climate change agenda to push everything down your throat sideways. So I see this story yesterday. There's a new side effect to excess carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. You want to know what that is? More green plants. I was like, oh, well, more green plants. You know what? Since we're cutting down half of South America in the rainforest, I would have to say more green plants is probably a good thing. Since green plants consume carbon dioxide and release oxygen as a byproduct, I would think that we would want as many green plants as possible on this planet. Well, they found a way to try to tell me that more green plants is not necessarily a good thing. Because models are showing that though for the small interim period where they absorb all this extra carbon dioxide because they're a carbon sink, eventually it catches up and then it's not so good anymore. So at some point in the future, even though it's showing good effects now, Johnny, we're going to reserve the right to find some way that we make up in the future as we start deforesting or whatever without your knowledge, that we're going to blame it on that and tell you, see, we told you so. Climate change and making green plants is not a good thing. The logic everywhere is so skewed. Society as a whole has gotten broken. And I mean beyond broken, like mental freaking lunatic broken. And all of us who aren't lunatics are really, really, really struggling because we like to try, or we used to, we were groomed to try to believe what we were taught or told, especially by authority figures, except that everything is utter and absolute bullshit. And when you call bullshit on it, you start to look like a lunatic. But I'm not a lunatic. How many times can we look at stuff like, oh no, climate change? And the side effect is, oh, green plants, and it's bad. Get scared, cry, run away. What? Since when? I saw something, too, the other day about not only are green plants bad, but because plants produce H2O as a byproduct of photosynthesis, that more plants are going to add more moisture into the atmosphere, which then is going to cause it to trap more greenhouse gases. What? I mean, yeah, a little more humid maybe, but there's a thing called the hydraulic cycle that happens. I mean, there's always water in the atmosphere, and being down in a tropical rainforest, I don't know. I think I'd rather have that than complete barren dust bowl, wouldn't you? I think I'd be happier. And considering, like I said, that there is such a huge amount of deforestation that's going on down in places like South America, where we had all of those green forests that were large carbon sinks. Not only that, is probably where the majority of the cures that we still don't have are probably down in that jungle somewhere. And all the wildlife that's being displaced. I mean, there, you know, the ice sheet thing was one thing. And I'm still calling bullshit on that. I'm seeing Antarctica now has got all this ice and whatever. But now they're trying to convince us that green plants are bad. On what world are green plants bad? Maybe Mars? But on Earth, green plants are bad. So let's get back to this insanity. So now, with their hubris of gods convincing us that green plants are bad, and we're going to need synthetic, by the way, because synthetic will fix it all up. Get rid of all those plants. Let's spray deforesting chemicals. What's that called? From Vietnam. I just saw they were just using that in Japan. And there were a lot of U.S. soldiers that were exposed to it in Japan. Oh, what's it called? Agent Orange. Yeah, Monsanto. Let's just go spray Agent Orange all over them. We'll kill all the natural plant life and we'll replace it with our new and improved patented formula. GMO and CRISPR. All the way, and it could do all kinds of cool things. And it's got little cameras and microphones, so you could do like 24/7 selfies no matter where you are. I don't know, it's just insanity. Anyway, you know, how many days can you do this? And I gotta find some humor sometimes, guys. Otherwise, I think I feel like jumping off a bridge. All right. Anyway, so scientists in Spain on Wednesday said they had created human sperm from skin cells, a medical feat that could eventually lead to a treatment for infertility. Researchers said that they were working to find a solution for roughly 15% of couples worldwide who are unable to have children and whose only option is to use donated egg or sperm. And what's really bothersome about all of this is we were just reading a story about how human genome editing in the lab and in petri dishes now is spreading. Originally, we had heard of approval in China. Then we heard of approval in China and the UK. The UK was doing the three-person IVF, which they're just now working on approval in the United States. But then the UK had approved messing around with embryos that will not be implanted in a petri dish a few months back. Well, now we have Sweden to join the game. And it's anything goes. Remember, we were reading about how absolutely competitive this is. That senator, representative, whatever he was, congressman, that we heard yesterday in the video about the 21st Century Cares Act was saying about how we want to try to keep scientists here in the United States, unlike back in the 80s where there was the brain drain, where we wouldn't allow them to experiment with stem cell therapies made from abortal fetal tissue. And so a lot of the researchers went overseas. And we don't want that to happen again. I think we were looking at maybe it was Michio Kaku last week in that interview that he had done on that Singularity One-on-One. He had said the same thing, that even now it's happening. And we're going to lose this race in genomics if we don't open up some of the capabilities of making Iron Man. And here's the thing. Many of the countries out there, like China, they don't have any flipping laws like we do. And, you know, there aren't any international laws that I'm aware of. Maybe some very light ethical, you know, guidelines that they put out there, but I don't think there's any global medical establishment that's saying you absolutely do not mix and match human genes with beagles. You know, I mean, it's anything goes. So here we are now. Now we're messing with embryos, and we found ways to create sperm cells from skin cells. And you could do whatever you wanted with those skin cells. They could be anybody's skin cells. And you do not need now humans to be involved. You could have a big skin repository that then you made sperm out of to then create humans in your clone factory like they have in China. I just found that story again. And they absolutely said that. They said, yeah, we can create, I think it was like 1 million cattle. I don't remember if it was 1 million cattle a year or a month, but it was a huge number in their clone factory. And by the way, it's set up to be able to reproduce humans like that as well. It's not going to be too long. Who, you know, cannon fodder, brain fodder. Let's start doing testing on these replicants. I think that's what we read, that the one program, that was the robot program, was being called the replicants. But, you know, we got Ray Kurzweil now saying 2029, it's coming. And he wanted to be able to upload and download his brain to the machine. Well, who says it needs to be a robot body? Maybe it could be a nice clone body with a wiped brain. And then you could just order one on demand. Everything is starting to get all winky. Hold on 1 second here. I wanted to get the Ars Technica story about Microsoft. Oh, come on. Oh, did I say the wrong word? The whole computer is freezing. It's okay. I need a break, guys. It's already Thursday, isn't it? The days just all blend together. I wake up every morning and I go, oh my God, I'm so tired. Can I sleep in? And then I look at the clock and it says, no, it's 9:30. You better get your ass up, get your coffee, and then try and figure out what we're talking about today. Come on. All right, hold on. We might have to open this all up over on the other machine because this one is not being cooperative all of a sudden. Oh, damn it. Hold on. Okay, well, let's just pretend that I'm okay. My whole browser, see, had I gotten up more than a half hour before the show, I might have put all these tabs, the 32 that are currently open, into a Word or a text document to have them ready and waiting for the instant my machine crashes, since it just happens occasionally after the computer has to think too much. And I didn't, so shame on me. But here we go. By the way, I subscribe to that Nicola Danielle Love's page. He was the one that did the who has that Singularity one-on-one series where he does interviews with all kinds of famous people. He's the one that actually interviewed Michio Kaku, the one that I played last Friday. And I have to say, I love the guy's accent, but I have to say, he's had on some absolutely amazing kick-ass guests, and I just see he's got some new one he just posted. All right. Now that I'm back to my Before the First Cup page, I posted a story right before I came on air. Speaking of bastardizing and minimizing life, being able to create sperm out of skin cells, so they don't even need us anymore. Doesn't matter if you've lost your gender orientation, and that may affect reproduction, because if everybody's going to live forever, quote unquote, and we've cured aging, then we won't need to reproduce anymore, right? And with the advent of virtual reality and Pornhub, was that what the name of that site was? Pornhub offering free VR porn. We got sex bots coming left, right, and sideways. The VR sex bots. Pretty disturbing. They won't need us to reproduce. And when they do need to reproduce some new replicants, it'll be pretty easy to make them utilizing some sort of stem cell made from skin to then create sperm. And I'm sure somewhere out there we talked about them creating eggs. I don't know. I'd have to look. Anyway, but added a step further, mad science. So now Microsoft gets in the game. You know, we've talked about DNA storage lots and lots and lots of times. Well, this just came out last night, April 27, 2016. Microsoft is now experimenting with DNA storage. And it is million is 6 zeros, so billion is 9. It is 1 billion terabytes of storage in a gram of DNA. Now, I've been talking about DNA storage for quite a number of years now. When I first started reading about this, I was extremely disturbed. I still am. Even more so now, because now Microsoft's in the game. But I'd always postulated that the NSA would want to be getting their hands on this, because when I first was reading about DNA storage, they had said literally that you could take every action, every word spoken, every butterfly wing that has flapped ever in the history of life on planet Earth, capture all that and store it into less than a pound of DNA. Well, apparently, I don't know how much data that would be or how much a pound of DNA would be even at this point. But now we have some real numbers. In just a gram of DNA, we can store 1 billion terabytes. I mean, is that a petabyte? A zettabyte? It's a zettabyte. Most people don't even know what a zettabyte is. They'd be like, a zetta what? That's why they got to tell you. It's 1 billion terabytes, because you understand terabytes. All right, let's read this. Reading and writing are a bit of a chore, but it keeps data safe for thousands of years. Yeah, and we were just reading about that. Like, this is storage that can last thousands, if not millions, of years. We were reading at one point with something that once they had it, they stored it in glass or whatever. You know, CD-ROMs only last like 20 years. I don't know if you knew that, but I always thought that once something was burned to a CD-ROM, it lasted forever, and it doesn't, apparently. But I guess give it up for the genetically modified human DNA that's now being used as a hard drive, and we could look at least at thousands, if not millions of years. All right. Microsoft is buying. Yes, buying. This is what we've come down to. Mail order DNA. Microsoft is buying 10 million strands of DNA from biology startup Twist Bioscience. And if that name doesn't give it away, it is Twist Bioscience. To investigate the use of genetic material to store data. The data density of DNA is orders of magnitude higher than conventional storage systems, with 1 gram of DNA able to represent close to 1 billion terabytes, or in parentheses, a zettabyte of data. DNA is also remarkably robust. DNA fragments thousands of years old have been successfully sequenced. And these properties make it an intriguing option for long-term data archival. Binary data has already been successfully stored as DNA pairs, with estimates in 2013 suggesting that it would be economically viable for storage for 500 years or more. The big difficulty with DNA storage is reading and writing. The writing is done by Twist. The company can produce custom strings of DNA using machine constructed, and the company's main customers are research labs that insert genetic material into microbes to produce organisms that can perform useful chemical processes such as producing desired nutrients. And we're going to talk about that. This is this new way to circumvent any type of needing to designate something as a genetically modified food. They're using bacteria that then they genetically modify to produce certain products. And then when they insert it into the food, like the CRISPR mushroom we discovered, it changes the makeup of the DNA of the food, but it's a bacteria that's doing it that was genetically modified, not them directly genetically modifying the food, in which case they can circumvent having to tell anyone that it has been genetically modified, which does not make sense to me. But hey, again, 21st Century Cures Act, we heard our Western diet is not healthy for us and it makes us a tax on the medical system. And God forbid we don't have any money. And it's all going to these 21st century cures to make us all better. Fitbit biomonitoring, biosensors everywhere. You can have nanobots in your blood to keep you healthy, Johnny. So, you know what? Don't worry about it because we know what's best for you and we can take care of all of the bad stuff that nature tries to feed you. And we will decide and we will produce from a DNA level what we think you should be consuming. I mean, do you see? It's like every aspect of our lives, it isn't just an overruling oligarchy up there that's pointing and saying, like in the past, you're going to fight in our war machine. You're going to take our vaccines because, oh, we have a pandemic coming. They've gotten to the point now where all these little pieces that they've been tinkering with for the last 50 years, they found the rest of the little pieces. And now they have dubbed themselves as gods. That's what's different now. They weren't gods before. They were trying to be gods. They were rich mothers, but they still weren't gods because they couldn't create life. They couldn't manipulate life. They couldn't control life. They couldn't patent life. They couldn't monopolize life. They have gotten to the point now where they can manipulate and monopolize life at the component level of CATG. And not only that, they're going to turn us into storage devices. We're going to be walking hard drives, guys. These properties, of course, make it an intriguing option for long-term data archival. 500 years or more are being suggested as economically viable. The difficulty with DNA storage is reading and writing, and the writing is done by Twist. They can use DNA for data storage. And it is a new field for the company. Custom DNA sequence costs about 10 cents per base pair, with Twist hoping to get that cost down to 2 cents. Reading the data uses genetic sequencing, and the costs of this have dropped substantially, and we just read that with Ventnor. went from like $150,000 down to $1,500, and it's going to get even cheaper. The Human Genome Project, ding, ding. Keep reading about how that is just the pinnacle. Remember, Obama said that quite a few years back. Genome Project is going to be the economic engine, like, of the 20th century. The Genome Project was the economic engine that is now building upon with CRISPR and all this other stuff and the Brain Project. This is going to be the economy of the 21st century. And this same sequencing test now, from 1990 to 2003, which cost about $3 billion for that Genome Project, that same test can now be done for about $1,000. Those costs, though dropping, mean that commercial viability of synthetic DNA storage is way off. But the technology itself works. And Microsoft says that his initial trials with Twist have shown that the process allowed full retrieval of the encoded data from DNA. And if the technology can be made cheap enough, it means that one day, long-term data archival could use the same technology as life itself. Well, that should make you feel great, shouldn't it? We're going to use the same technology as life itself to store cat pictures, right? We've talked about that before. All right, well, I don't know. I'm almost afraid that I might have to Chuck, well, hold on. I got a plug-in error. I got two plug-in errors. So maybe if I can recover from these, we can get the show back. There's one. Let's try the other script error. Come on, stop it, stop. Stop. Here we go. Here we go, here we go. I have all kinds of stuff lined up about some of the new mad science, and they've been here for days. And all right, well, here, I found one of the stories I was going to talk about on my Facebook page on the other machine. So now we have all this mad science going on, all the genomics, being able to identify, use all kinds of technologies to be able to identify you now as defective, since they're locating what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly on the human genome. Well, get this. And they now have located where the happiness genes live. Yeah. You know, as we're discussing how the former head of the National Institute of Mental Health has gone to work for Google in his life sciences division, is going to come up with ways to be able to diagnose your spectrum mental illness using a smartphone app. We got all this brain research going on, zipping and zapping with DARPA dollars to figure out how to fix all these little brain problems. And now, from a genomics perspective, they've discovered where the happiness gene lives. Oh, Johnny, look. You have a defective happiness gene. And we're going to fix you. Don't worry about it. We have all this technology. Step right up. All we need to do is inject you with these little nanobodies that go in and do all the work, and you won't feel a thing. The first happiness genes have been located. Genetic overlap between happiness and depression is discovered. It's out of Science Daily. For the first time in history. Remember, first time ever. Lots of those over the last couple years. First time in history, researchers have isolated the parts of the human genome, not the brain, the genome, that could explain differences in how humans experience happiness. These are the findings of a large-scale international study of over 298,000 people. I wonder why they didn't make it just an even round number of 300,000. That seems kind of silly. Oh, Firefox has just took a massive crap. All right, hold on. wait for the program to respond or close it. And I think I'm going to have to close it and then cross my fingers that these 32 tabs will want to recover. Because otherwise, we're not going to go anywhere. For the first time in history, researchers have isolated the parts of the human genome that could explain the differences in how humans experience happiness. These are the findings of a large-scale international study of 298,000 people conducted by VU Amsterdam professors Mieke Bartels and Philip Kohlinger. And the researchers found three genetic variants for happiness. Two variants that can account for differences in symptoms of depression, and 11 locations on the human genome that could account for varying degrees of neuroticism. Uh-oh. See? So they are coming up with ways to be able to diagnose mental illness genetically. Because if you read about, like, narcissism and the narcissistic psychopathy disorder and all the different... Oh, boy. I just got a black screen now on the other computer, and now they're trying to download stuff. No. All right, close. They've been talking about the different types of narcissistic personality disorder. Neuroticism was one of the different types that was like a symptom of one of the different types. So it's interesting. Of course, it's caused by trauma in your childhood. And now, apparently, your genes. Where did we just see that? Prior twin and family research using information from the Netherlands Twin Register. I bet you didn't know you had that, Salvador. And other sources have shown individual differences in happiness and well-being can be partially ascribed to the genetic differences within people. Hold on. Clear recent history. No, restore previous session. Oh, look, it's all grayed out. Huh. I think we just lost the whole show history. Hold on, guys. Sorry, I hate having to screw around with this garbage. Are you? It won't even let me go to history. Well, let's just open it all. Uh-oh. Huh. Today, yesterday, last 7 days. I don't know. I'll just have to read slow. I can't. My whole machine is in like complete crash out mode now on the other side where the whole show was. Oh, well, guess we don't get to read about what Bill Gates is doing with bananas. he is, too. They're doing some pretty crazy stuff. Anyway, prior twin and family research using information from the Netherlands Twin Register and other sources has shown that individual differences in happiness and well-being can be partially ascribed to genetic differences between people. Happiness and well-beings are the topics of an increasing number of scientific studies in a variety of academic disciplines, right? Because they want to show how you're unhappy, Johnny, and you need some therapy. We'll be able to provide that to you. And as a matter of fact, Google's got this program going on. We have the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health working there. And he's got some ideas on how he can fix you. I keep losing my place. Policymakers are increasingly focusing on well-being, drawing primarily on the growing body of evidence suggesting that well-being is a factor in mental and physical health. And yeah, we had a whole ton of stories too on them manipulating the gut bacteria and how that is just so totally connected to your gut flora, how they're going to manipulate the food we eat to change our gut flora, to change our mental state. And good old DARPA has been involved in all kinds of stuff having to do with that. Their ElectRx program, the vagus nerve. Trust me, it sounds insane, but it's not. UV Amsterdam professor Michael Bartels says this study is both a milestone and a new beginning, and a milestone because we are now certain that there is a genetic aspect to happiness, and a new beginning because of the three variants that we know are involved to account for only a small fraction of the differences between human beings. We expect that many variants will play a part, but locating these variants will also allow us to better study the interplay between nature and nurture, as well as environment is certainly responsible to some extent for the differences in the way people experience happiness. I'm really irritated at the moment that Firefox just like not only crashed me beyond belief, but then decided to chuck like every link I had. maybe I can find some of them. Oh my god. Yeah, well, I'm gonna have to rebuild this later. It's not gonna happen while I'm on air. All right, anyway, back to the story. There's one more paragraph. These results are from a collaborative project with the Social Science Genetic Association Consortium that are available for follow-up research, and this will create an increasingly clearer picture of what causes differences in happiness. The genetic overlap with depressive symptoms that we have found is also a breakthrough. This shows that research into happiness can also offer insights into the causes of one of the greatest medical challenges of our time. Oh, depression. And, you know, DARPA's been working on that, of course, with the soldiers, trying to find ways to combat PTSD, pushing the dopamine buttons, remember, being able to get into their brains with little implants and fix that depression with electrical zaps. So the fact that we have now found a genetic component. I have two machines now that are going haywire. To find a genetic component to depression and happiness is pretty damn interesting. Especially when we know that they can be influenced by our gut bacteria and by what we ingest. And I probably am not going to be able to locate that story that I wanted to hit about depression that was next up in line. I'm going to have to skip that one. Let's take a look at this. So might as well throw the whole show out the window. Jesus, you know, this really pisses me off because I've been working for, what is it, Thursday? So 4 days down the entire line, and there was an entire progression to this week that I spent lots of time this weekend researching, and now we might as well just chuck it out a window because it's all disjointed and makes no sense. All right, well, I guess for the last 8 minutes now, we're going to do something completely different since I can access nothing. We talked about them getting into your head and being able to read your thoughts, being able to do behavioral monitoring. I just was reading something last night. But all this great new stuff that they're working on from a DARPA perspective for securing the Internet of Things. And DARPA has just put it into overdrive. And not only are they working on securing the Internet of Things, which happened to be DARPA Dan's old project. Before DARPA Dan hopped over to Google, before Regina Duggan hopped from DARPA to Google and then left Google and went to Facebook, yes. Well, now the Internet of Things security project is going to include being able to do predictive behavior monitoring and go after hackers and be able to collect private and public information about you, be able to connect to remote devices that may identify you easier than an IP address, like cameras. And we're not just talking cell phone cameras. We're talking like all the stuff that we always assume that they're able to do, which, I don't know, maybe it was only on a limited basis, but they're talking about cranking up the window. They want to be able to take every device that you might have contact with and collect information about you if you happen to be a target of interest that is now a security threat because they thought you were trying to hack something. So check this out. This is Brad. Meet Brad. He is now the new AI interrogator. He's a virtual persona taught to tell when people are lying and when people are telling the truth. So talk about behavioral analytics. Keep giving it up to the machine people, because the more you give up, the more biometrics that they have to be able to then use as baseline. Automated deception detection is said to be one of the biggest security challenges of the century. But to overcome this obstacle, researchers have now developed an automated interview system, which is a virtual interrogator. It can conduct interviews and determine deviations in people's physiology and behavior via sensors. However, researchers found that the machine was only effective if the subjects believe the system is being controlled by a human and not a computer. So they apparently don't believe in the computer's powers of assessment yet. But you just wait. When it's the monster in the machine that knows everything about you, I think I'd be more afraid than of an artificially intelligent hive mind interrogator than I would of any person. Scientists at the University of Twente set out to investigate whether perceiving an automated interview system as operated by a human or a computer influences cues to deception in the form of increased sympathetic nervous system activity. The team recruited 79 subjects for the study that were asked to take over the work of a transport sector worker who had reported in sick. And while performing these tasks, the participants were then coerced into committing fraud by signing contracts that they were not qualified for. Then they were interviewed by a human-like avatar on a screen regarding their transgression. This avatar was named Brad. They should make Brad better looking. I bet that would make a difference, honestly. For guys, have the interrogator be Brangelina with big titties. And they'll give everything up. And do the same on the other end. Make you a Chippendale clone for the chicks. They'll give it up. Have them sweet talk them. You know how that works. Use the psychopath formula for manipulation and you'll get everything you wanted to know. Sorry, I didn't mean that, but it's true. Human psychology is a dangerous thing. They were then interviewed by a human-like avatar named Brad on the screen regarding their transgression. And when confronted by human-like avatars, people generally are uncertain to which degree the avatar really directly represents the actions and thoughts of a person controlling the avatar. Researchers found that it was impossible to tell whether or not they were telling the truth or lying if the subject believed that Brad was computer controlled. But those who believed it was human controlled revealed a very clear difference. The differences between the truth and the lie and intention condition became larger when the participant believed the avatar was controlled by a human and the avatar in the study was being controlled by a human, but the participants were unaware of that initially. The human operator could hear and see the participants on separate screens and was able to respond to dialogue in real time. Researchers instructed some subjects to be truthful all of the time, and others were told to constantly lie. During the interrogation, isn't this reminding you of something like 12 Monkeys? Because I know it is me. During the interrogation, the subject's electrodermal activity was measured, so they must have been like seeing whether or not you started sweating, which is the most commonly used measure in a lie detection test. And the electrical dermal activity reflects the SNS activity, which I think is, hold on, they mention it up top. Where is it? What's SNS? I think it's your sympathetic nervous system. So they must be somehow monitoring you, at least for this test. It reflects the SNS, so your brain starts to go all zappy when you start to get sweaty, which is easily measured in one measurement, said researchers, and skin conductance of each subject was also taken in order to see how much a person was sweating. So here, the avatar asks each person 10 questions, such as, is this your signature, or do you want to add something? And during the interrogation, the avatar showed visual and verbal cues of natural listening behaviors, such as saying, mm-hmm, yes, and okay, while the conversation partner is talking in order to increase its credibility as a virtual agent. So, just beware, because eventually we're going to have Brad. And Brad not only will be our interrogator, but I think Brad is going to be our personal assistant. I saw that they're now going to have these personal assistants on Facebook, and maybe we could talk about that. Bots, right? We had the Taybot for Microsoft. It's all going to be about interacting with the machine for them to pull our biobehavioral algorithms. All right, guys. Well, if you can... I've up